They'd been on the run, fighting every step of the way, for too damn long. The half-healed cut on his gun hand was starting to stiffen, seriously slowing his speed. Not good. Across the shelter, Christy was rubbing her bad shoulder, and the others looked as if they had been run over a couple of times by a war wag. Everybody was scratching at the itchy, dried salt on their clothes, and down here in the close confines of the shelter house, the rank smell of unwashed bodies was starting to leave an oily taste in his mouth. Mildred was always touting cleanliness for health, but more importantly, when they went outside, the stink would reveal their presence to anybody in the vicinity, and leave a hell of a fine trail for dogs to follow. And those triple-blasted crabs.
"We'll start on the juice tomorrow."
Ryan sat on a wall bunk. The mattress was a hell of a lot softer than the sand dune he awakened on that morning.
"I think we'd better stay here for a while, get clean, and catch some sleep. We have to cross three waterways to reach the island with a vill. Got the blasters to try now, but we're never going to make it if we're dragging ass every step of the way."
"Wouldn't mind a hot shower myself."
JB glanced at the rusty stalls.
"We could probably get those running in short order."
"How long?"
Jack padded over in his bare feet. The teenager was sliding laces through the holes of a brand new pair of combat boots. Ryan dropped his backpack and flexed his shoulders.
"A week."
He laid the Steyr nearby. The blaster desperately needed to be completely disassembled and oiled.
"We'll have to guard the fireplace for crabs, and have somebody in the lighthouse to watch for the Baron's men. Place a few C4 charges along the stairwell in case of trouble. But we should be safe enough down here. For a while, at least."
Dropping their backpacks with sighs of relief, the companions got busy rearranging the crates to make more space, and started settling in for the night. After establishing a firing line for defense, food was gobbled straight from the MRE packs, and the exhausted friends took turns sleeping and standing guard. Soon, the soft breathing of exhausted sleep filled the bomb shelter. But all through the starry tropical night, the army of crabs crawled around the peninsula outside like flies on a corpse, endlessly searching for some way inside. 100 nautical miles away, on another island, Lord Baron Maxwell Kinnison was driving a pre-dark Hummer along the edge of a steep cliff at breakneck speed. Slowly, dawn began to tint the east sky, the polluted storm clouds overhead rumbling with thunder. Revving the powerful engine on the Hummer, Kinnison banked sharply around a small avalanche of rocks and cut away from the slide to go deeper into the thick jungle of Maturo Island. There was little terrain on his island hill he didn't know in detail, having crawled and run and fought pirates on every hill. His path to the throne as Baron of all Barons had been steeped in blood. Not one single drop of it his. At least, none in combat. Arcing through a dense copse of thorny bushes, Kinnison headed back toward the seaside cliffs, his two passengers holding on for dear life against the wag's wild rocking. A growth of bamboo was smashed aside, and their goal popped into sight. The cottage stood on the swell of a cliff overlooking the calm sea. The roof was solid, glass filled the windows, and the thick door was bolted on the inside. A clear stream flowed past the cottage and over the cliff, bringing fresh drinking water and carrying away each day's bucket of waste. The trees were heavy with fruit, the vines rich with flowers, whose scent repelled most of the insects. A fence of thorny bushes cut off the cottage and its garden from the rest of the island, and at the gate was a hand-painted sign bearing the symbol of the Lord Baron, followed by a death's head skull. The meaning was plain and clear. Cross the fence and die. With the engine roaring, the Hummer smashed aside the sign and rolled over the gate as if the posts were no more than leaves on the road. The pre-dark machine raced directly to the front door, and the three occupants stepped out, two much more quickly than the third. Lord Baron Kinnison, ruler of the Thousand Islands, hoisted his tremendous bulk from the vehicle, grunting constantly. He was becoming weaker every day, and knew that the end was near. He was wrapped in thick layers of protective cloth, the material spotted with dried blood and moist yellow patches from fresh skin eruptions. The ends had been cut off his boots to allow his toes to breathe. Circulation was very bad in his feet, and he feared gangrene daily. His face was a mass of open sores, and the fingers of both hands were wrapped in strips of cloth stained black and yellow from the dried blood and pus. Some half-mutie slut from one of the western islands had given him the Red Death during sex. The disease was incurable, and the Baron had tortured the girl for a moon before allowing her to finally die. The leprosy was eating him alive, faster all the time. The flash was no longer working. His end was near. But the Baron had already prepared for that eventuality. The slim driver and the young slave girl waited patiently as the gigantic man squeezed his bulk from the military vehicle and finally stood. Briefly, Kennison checked the array of pre-dark blasters hidden about his bulk. Impatiently, the driver started to speak, and Kennison silenced him with a raised hand. The soft cry of a newborn child could be heard from within the cottage.
Boy or girl?
The slave bowed her head.
A boy, master. A healthy boy.
No mutations at all?
Kennison brandished a fist.
Are you absolutely sure?
Yes, my lord. He is a Norm. Big, but a gene-pure Norm.
And you can smell them, little one. That's why I keep you alive, for that one special trait. You can smell the mutie on a man or woman, as if it was the stink from a swamp.
She bowed.
Yes, master.
You have served me well this day, but I cannot allow any to know of the child's real parents. Goodbye.
The girl stared in astonishment as the Baron drew a silenced pistol from inside his clothing and fired. The blaster only coughed, but the slave violently staggered backward and sat down, blood trickling from the black hole in her face. In slow stages, she toppled over, as if only laying herself down for a long nap. Holstering the piece, Baron Kinnison stared at the house. The Baron had given it to a faithful servant who saved his life from an assassin's blade. He had even given the man the most beautiful wife he could find, and made sure all of the food delivered to the couple was as clean as his own meals. Everything had been done to make the idiots breed him an heir, and 2 years later, the bitch finally whelped. 2 years. He wanted to tear them apart for that, but the man had saved his life once. The reward would be a clean chill.
Here.
Kennison passed the silenced weapon to the doctor.
Ace the parents as painlessly as possible, and get the child. Do not let it touch me. If it gets my disease, your punishment will last for years after my own death.
Dr. Glassman nodded, holding the weapon awkwardly as if unfamiliar with how to use it.
Then, take the newborn to my rooms, and kill the pregnant woman in my bed. Burn the unborn girl, and rub the boy with the woman's blood so they smell alike. Then send the news that I have a son.
Of course, my lord. Only...
What?
The Baron's piggy eyes glared with fury.
Afterward, you'll have to kill me to keep the secret. This I know, so I refuse to do as you command.
Kennison stared at the man in disbelief. The doctor continued quickly.
Unless you set my family free.
Already he was afraid he had gone too far, asked for too much, but it was too late to turn back now.
Give them a boat and food and black powder enough for 4 blasters. When the boat is out of the harbor, I will announce the news of your son.
You dare.
Baron Kinnison stared low and dangerous, drawing another weapon from his clothing. It was a bigger blaster, trimmed with gold filigree and sporting a barrel wider than a grown man's thumb. Yet Glassman stayed oddly calm.
You would do anything to make your son a blood heir to the Iron Throne of the Thousand Islands. Why do you think I would do less for my son to be free?
Without speaking, Lord Baron Kinnison raised the blaster and thumbed back the hammer. Dr. Glassman stood there with the blaster in his hand, knowing that he could never use it. The punishment for attacking the Baron would bring bloody horror to his family forever. He had played his card, father to father. The gambit would be accepted, or he would be chilled. That was all there was to it. A long minute passed, with only the sounds of the ocean breeze and the soft cries of the newborn child. Then, Kinnison slowly eased down the hammer with his gore-streaked thumb.
Accepted. They go free, and you die.
Agreed.
They both entered the tiny cottage. Oh my God. There were raised voices, a woman's scream, the soft chug of a silenced weapon firing again and again. And then the man walked out, carrying a tiny, wiggling bundle of life. Glassman and the infant took the front seats, and Kinnison squeezed his bulk into the rear cargo area to stay as